The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Welcome to it. Weekend editions here at Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, 80s action star Colton Stone. Give us a follow on Twitter at Schmidt underscore radio, at Two Birds One Stone, at Mark Skurs, and as always, at Hail Varsity. Get into the Dedrick Mills situation as that is looming. We'll talk some Husker hoops and thoughts on the national championship game, Clemson v. Bama, the third time. Maybe the charm for you is both teams will touch gloves on Monday night. Can get in this morning, 466-3776, 466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Can fire off an email, chris@hailvarsity.com or mark@hailvarsity.com. Lots to get to this morning. Kranak, what's good?
You know, what are we supposed to talk about? Chris, I'm sorry. I know maybe this is unprofessional, but I mean, what are we supposed to talk about now? It's kind of like, where's football? Where's Nebraska football? Why does it feel like it's that time already?
Well,
it just feels so quiet.
It is a little bit quiet. I mean, you got winter conditioning around the corner. Spring ball will be here, thank the Lord, soon enough. And I mean, you and I both know it's back-to-back years for the first time in forever. There's no bowl game for Nebraska, and that's not something you'll ever get used to, but it's been a reality the last 2 years. So you're forced to watch other teams, and you're forced to, frankly, watch a bad season of bowls, aside from Washington State, Iowa State. Let's hope the championship game delivers. Second half of OU Oklahoma, or I should say Oklahoma Bama, wasn't awful.
It was one guy running crazy,
running for his life.
Yeah, that's really all it was. That was Oklahoma's offense.
Yep.
I don't know. At least that provided some entertainment. You can see why he won the Heisman, I guess.
Yeah, he's fantastic. But you know, Nebraska basketball is not football. But man, there's some upheaval with losing another close one we can dive into as well. But we spent some time last week talking with Gary Sharp about Dedrick Mills and his situation. And things got remedied a little bit with Mills. And he's on probation. He still has time to sign papers. And kind of in the waiting period here between Mills and Nebraska, let's talk a little bit here about that talent that Mills has, and does it outweigh some past transgressions? That's always the question. You need a back that's super dynamic, that is talented, that's physical, that's fast, and that you know can do some big things in this Frost offense. You're just wondering if Mills will be able to put it all together, and not only from an academic standpoint, but also a decision-making standpoint. You know he's got talent to thrive on the field. That isn't the question. Will he be able to stay on the field and make better choices? That is what it's all about.
Well, look, there's already things out there. Okay, so there's already things that have happened, so this isn't throwing stones or anything. But the reason why he left Georgia Tech is because he failed a drug test 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
3 times. And at Georgia Tech, that is, you have to, you're just done. Third time, it's not even a coach's decision at that point. That's just the rule. You are off the team. Pretty big, extensive write-up in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution about it about a year ago before he found his way over to Garden City. And he claimed at that time that he's clean. He's clean now. He doesn't do it anymore. Who knows if that's true? Because then when you look at the transgression, the latest one, the reason why he was in jail for a couple of days, is
yep.
that right?
Yep. Failure to report. Failure to appear.
Okay, right. So let's just back up. Like, what are we talking about here? Okay. We're talking about a dude that's just kind of, you know, he needs to get off the couch, right? He needs to just, you know, like, hey, man, you got stuff to do. You sure. got to get up. You got to go. Right. So I don't think we're talking about some sort of, I don't know. It feels like the type of guy that can make some improvements. Right.
Well, and
just by getting into a program, just by sure. getting into a regimented situation.
And a place that can help make him make those improvements are his peers and teammates around him, the type of culture that Coach Frost is building. And the type of players within that culture, in that locker room, you got to ultimately make your own choices. But what are your influences around you, right? And from a positive influence standpoint, Scott Frost, Ryan Held, Nebraska football is a massive shot of positive when it comes to, you know, his failure to appear for a citation back to July when he was cited for speeding and driving with a suspended license. No one likes to spend time in the Iron Bar Motel, and there's just some things and decisions that need to be made. The question yeah. I have is Nebraska still willing and wanting to take him? There's a spot open. They have not turned their back on the kid. They would like to have him. Sam McEwen did a great job in reporting this with the Omaha World Herald, so I want to give credit to him with this news. And you just wonder about, okay, you've been good enough to be offered and be accepted and be good enough to play at Georgia Tech, okay? So that's your starting point. You have the three failed tests. You go to JUCO from Georgia Tech, and that itself could have been a wake-up call. And then while at JUCO, you have your license issues and your failure to appear, and that's an issue. Also, when it comes to your schoolwork, what have you been able to knock out? What have you been able to do successfully to be eligible to graduate and then get this next opportunity at Nebraska? And, yeah. I mean, that is your timeline of events. And Nebraska would have bailed a long time ago if they weren't interested in helping this guy change and also, yes, use his talents.
Yeah, well, and I wouldn't be surprised. I think Nebraska is kicking the tires on a couple of potential transfers. Athlon had a nice write-up about that, of some potential, five running backs that are grad transfer eligible should the Mills situation not work out, or should Nebraska just want to hedge their bets and bring in more competition? There's one guy at Cal, and he's an interesting case. I don't know if he graduated in two years or something, but he's at Cal. He's 5'11", 210. On Twitter, he is being followed by Cole Ashby.
Mm-hmm.
Cole Ashby at Nebraska is he's an offensive assistant for the receivers, and so a lot of the offensive assistants obviously have recruiting duties. So there's a follow happening there, which is interesting. I don't know, 5'11", 210, kid out of San Diego. Didn't play a whole lot for Cal last year, but he did play some. But he was big time out of San Diego. He's a four-star recruit. He's got some talent. He's got kind of that size, and that's what you wonder too. So and that's what Mills represents. Do you need Mills to win the Big Ten West next year? Maybe not necessarily, but do you need that body type?
You need that style of back.
Yeah, you would think, right? I mean, mm-hmm. you saw how Ezigbo did with it, and you look across the roster. You know, Jalen Bradley's actually got some size, but is he going to be able to put it together? He's mm-hmm. obviously had some situations where he hasn't been able to put it together to get on the field to contribute. But he's got decent size. Decent. He's not a huge back. But I mean, Mills would obviously help. But I see this staff not necessarily. I think they're holding the spot for him, but I don't think they're putting all their eggs in that basket. I think they're looking at some other opportunities out there. There's also a receiver out of Miami that Nebraska's seems to be pretty heavily recruiting. There's some follows and some follows back on Twitter there. Big 6'5" Lawrence Cagers. led the Hurricanes in touchdowns and receptions this year. He's a grad transfer. He's looking to go somewhere. Looks like Iowa State and Nebraska are both on him pretty heavily. He's following them back. So who knows where that'll go. I think Nebraska will continue to be pretty hot on the transfer market. Mm-hmm. Not just JUCO transfers, but actual grad transfers like we saw with Trey Neal last year.
Well, Greg Smith of HaleVarsity.com was able to get in contact with Dedrick Mills. And Mills told Hale Varsity's Greg Smith that he is still committed to Nebraska, finishing up his winter classes, yep. and he'll be enrolled in the summer. That's yep. good for that's great news for Nebraska. The role is key for him in the offense. The problem is Nebraska, and they're not alone in this. But if you go JUCO route, you want your difference makers. You want all the kids that can to enroll early, right? Get spring ball, get some summer conditioning in, and move forward that way. Get in early, get acclimated, and then go perform. So that's the other part of it here, is what the inability to perform and get things figured out with that spring session. That is, I don't want to say a deal breaker, but it can cause a bit of a pause, right? Because if you don't get the spring ball specifically with the JUCO guys, then are they swimming a little bit or not? Because their clock starts immediately, obviously, compared to the high school kids you bring in with the red shirt rule. And it's not as dire. It just depends on what role. And it looks like the role that you have for Dedrick Mills would be nice, because Nebraska is very multiple with what they want to do with their backs.
Yeah, and year two especially, it took a little bit, I think. Because, look, UCF, they didn't have a bigger back that was as capable as the Zigbu.
Right.
They just didn't, you know. And so I think it took them even a little while to be able to adjust to what he can do. And, you know, Frost has talked about his kind of vision all along is, hey, let's combine the Oregon blur with some Nebraska power. You know, and if there was ever a walking, example of that, that's the Zigbo. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the common. If you could put that philosophy into one human being last year, that was a Zigbo. And you saw what he did. I mean, come on. The guy, he's now positioned himself as an NFL back. And look, his runs, Chris, how many of his runs were just wide open?
Oh, they were wide open, but he also, I mean, you nailed it with that combination of size, power, and speed. And Ziggy was so much fun to watch finishing off the runs. Man, I wish we had four more years of Ziggy, and I wish his career wouldn't have been so splattered, or sporadic's probably a better word, because when he got in, he kicked ass and took names, and then you were left to wonder, why didn't we see Ziggy more in his career? I mean, when push came to shove and they needed tough yards, he was in there to get it, freshman to senior year, but he was almost an afterthought to everyone else they brought in. It's like everybody else got an opportunity in front of him, and he rose up and took charge. I think as miserable as most of that Tennessee-Nebraska bowl game was in Music City a few years back, Nebraska got going when? Well, you had JoJo Doman force a turnover, and then Ziggy's in there running the football. Nebraska comes back against Tennessee, makes it a game, right? You look at this season, I know they didn't beat Purdue, but you weren't getting great production from the ground game consistently with Greg Bell on top of the fumble problems, right? Well, what happened? Ziggy goes off against Purdue and kind of takes that job and runs with it. And for whatever reason, better late than never for Ziggy with his career. And he paid off big time with a 1,000-yard rushing season, and you're going to miss him greatly.
Yeah, and you're going to need – Mills is important to come in, but there's enough there that I think just kind of gives you pause. If he shows up, great. You like his chances once he gets in the program. Mm-hmm. You know, how many guys last year flaked out of the Frost program, right? You just didn't see that happen. You saw guys transfer.
Mm-hmm.
You saw guys maybe not want to work in the style that Frost and them wanted to work, and or maybe they didn't see a fit, but not too many guys flaked out. I think once you get into the system,
you would hear.
There's really not a I don't know. Like, you're kind of swept up in it, and that's your life, you know. And if you're and if you want to play at all, you got to kind of follow all the things, you know, which include just getting up. You know, you got to get up early, bro. We got practice coming because you look at what the things that are in common here with Mills. So he's driving under suspended license. Mm-hmm. Well, that means, hey, dude. You got to go make sure your license isn't suspended, right? There's probably some administrative paperwork stuff or whatever that he didn't handle. Well, you got to go do that.
And the fact that, I mean, you're driving on a suspended license, you're speeding. I mean, just choices, right?
Well, yeah, and then failure to appear.
Uh-huh.
Usually failure to appear is you probably could have paid a fine to where you didn't have to appear.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Or maybe he was in Kansas and the he had to actually be in Atlanta to appear and just never had. So he just didn't handle either one. He didn't go or he didn't pay the fine. So, you know, it just, I don't know. These seem like innocuous compared to some of the stuff that you've seen guys get in trouble with.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think these are huge character issues. I don't think he doesn't sound like a dangerous kid or anything like that. He just sounds like, you know, kind of he needs to handle his business. And that's basically what he's facing right now, too. Is he going to handle his business enough to be able to show up to Lincoln? And we'll see. But Nebraska can use him. There's no question. You got to have a bigger guy. For all the talk about Maurice Washington is all of a sudden going to be a two, you know, carry 205 or 210. We'll see. Right. I don't know if that guy's going to get up to that, at least right away. I could see him coming back at a $190 or so, but come on now. You're probably going to need that bigger back, and Mills is the most likely guy. But like I said, there is a guy, Derek Clark out of Cal, that's something to keep an eye on. He's a 5'11", 210 guy. If I'm not mistaken, I'll have to research it a little bit more. But so he just completed his redshirt freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm not mistaken, he already graduated from Cal.
That seems very excessive and quite intense.
Listen,
to be able to go to Cal and get in and get out that soon.
Listen, he will be a graduate transferring, according to his own Twitter. I will be a graduate transferring with 3 years of eligibility left.
Man.
Right. And then there's also a picture of him in a Cal baseball uniform. So I don't know if he's a multi-sport guy, but it appears that, unless he's just like playing dress up.
Just like playing baseball for Halloween.
Yeah. So I don't know. Hey, who knows? I mean, maybe Nebraska again. Maybe it's just an insurance policy. Maybe they're not terribly interested, but maybe they are. They do have a staff member following him on Twitter. The reason why you would follow him on Twitter is to be able to communicate with him now that he's on the grad transfer market. So who knows? Maybe that's a guy. And there's already Husker fans tweeting at him. So what does that tell you?
Don't rest on your laurels.
Pick Nebraska.
The Big Red faithful. Speaking of which, the large section of Nebraska basketball fans frustrated, torn, irate over what happened against Maryland. The 80s action star Colton Stone, a sullen, just sad head nod when we bring this up. You have two modes of Nebraska fan, elated and dejected. And Nebraska had it until they didn't. Kranak, you've watched a lot of Nebraska basketball. I grew up going. I love Section B. It's where I watched at the Devaney Center for a ton of years with my folks. And you get thumbnail shots of teams that are really, really talented in the entire history of Nebraska basketball. You think back to Scales and, of course, Carl Hayes and that 1991 team, Tony Farmer, Bo Reed. I mean, they were awesome, right? I mean, they were a three seed.
Pike.
They were, Pike was a freshman. You look at the Big 8 championship year with 94 and Chubbuck and even Ty Lue and Mikey Moore and Strick. And, I mean, they were – that was a really good golden era. And then you fast forward. Johnson. Yeah, you fast forward and you get the Petaway, Pitchford, Siobhan Shields crew that puts a run together, No Sit Sunday. Well, you have those type of expectations and more this year for Nebraska basketball coming off of a near miss last season in an NIT appearance. And Nebraska, man, it was just frustrating where some of their decision-making and execution let them down against Maryland with a chance to build an 8-point lead out of the gates in that second half. You know, Maryland's going to put a run together for sure, but Nebraska just didn't close out being the more experienced team. Folks were all over Miles. I don't know that it was all on him. There were some decisions that's his call, be it to use a timeout, to talk shot selection, or to change up from a 1-3-1 zone. Nebraska got killed on the glass, not just in bad, timely moments, see the end of the ball game, but just throughout, they gave Maryland some second chance opportunities. But just James Palmer Jr. is so good that he did a marvelous job of carrying Nebraska. But that was also at the cost of maybe sometimes getting the ball to Copeland, who only had 4 shot attempts. He went 3 for 4. Did any of the other teammates get in rhythm? Roby was good, and then Roby struggled from the free throw line. He played hurt, so tip your cap to him for that. But you have just a ball of nervousness for Nebraska basketball fans. It's not the end of the world being 1-3 in conference play, but they could easily be undefeated. It's not like they got outplayed or weren't in position to get a victory against Minnesota and Maryland. But you've seen this movie twice now in back-to-back road games. Will it get in their head a little bit? Chemistry's been great with this team. Is there some frustration based on some of the decision-making and how much of the ball is being shared? All those things are on the table for Sunday.
Yeah, the thing that's encouraging, I think, if you look at it, is look, Nebraska got rolled by Texas Tech. Mm-hmm. Just rolled, you know. But Texas Tech is closing in on a top 10 ranking right now. They're, you know, that's obviously a legitimate team that was on the road. It was early in the year. It happens. You know, it's not easy to win on the road. You know, Minnesota game, they were right there towards the end, kind of let it fade away. Maryland, right there. Another decent team. I think Maryland has a chance to climb into the rankings before it's all said and done if they continue to have a good year in the Big Ten. But they're, you know, 10-3. It's not like some garbage team. Mm-hmm. So the only loss of the whole year so far that you didn't feel good about, like, at all, was Texas Tech. The rest of the time, Nebraska's right there. And you know how it is in basketball, man, especially on the road. Like you mentioned it, Roby struggled at the free throw line. Can't happen. You know, on the road in conference, you can't struggle at the line.
Well, you know, you can't miss 8, you know?
No. These feel like, these don't feel like fundamental fatal flaws that Nebraska's facing right now. It's just, it's a couple bounces here and there. It's shooting a little better at free throw line. Now, that said, they don't look entirely. The 1-3-1 was very ineffective, mm-hmm. right? Like, very ineffective. That, I'm sure in their scout, there was something there, you know?
Well, where they'd had past success with it against Maryland.
Right. So you can understand why they went to it, but it wasn't very effective. But I think the biggest consistent frustration with Nebraska under Tim Miles in particular is offensive structure.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing at half court offense?
what are you doing in the half court? What are you doing out of timeouts? Kind of your set pieces, you know, if you compare it to soccer, like what are you doing when the kind of things have slowed down and it's not transition, it's not offense caused by defense, it's not Palmer going one-on-one, right? Like what can you go to out of timeouts when, you know, down the stretch when there's timeouts being called left and right and there's a lot of free throws, a lot of stoppages of play? That's when your half court offensive strategy really comes to play, because that's what the game turns into. where are you at there? What's your go-to? It can't always be get it to Palmer, let him go one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially as you get into the Big Ten season, you're going to have defenders that can lock him down, at least for a play or two.
I'm talking fatigue, and is his shot there? Is he going to get to the rim and take a better shot versus a settle shot?
Yeah, that too. But it can't all be on him, right? Like, it comes back to ball movement. It comes back to just general discernible offensive philosophy, let's go ahead and say that. Go ahead and write out a little essay on what is Nebraska's sort of offensive identity.
It'd be a short essay.
Do you know what I mean? I think that's the main frustration. And it's not just Miles. This goes back through the past couple coaches, really.
Mm-hmm.
Before Collier went to the Princeton.
Your identity is be great defensively. The offense will come. There you have it. And yeah, are you asking too much of Palmer, or are you telling Palmer, or are you not telling Palmer to find his teammates? I mean, you can't yell at a dude for being all Big Ten and averaging 20 plus a game and really carrying you for spurts and stretches of games. I mean, you got to take some of the if there is such thing with him, as bad with the good. But you do have the thing you do have with this lineup is you have the potential to have a very balanced offense. Doesn't have to be JPJ going for 38 and someone else going maybe chipping in 8. You have four guys. Honestly, you have five guys on that offense that have gotten you double figures.
Yeah.
And Borkhardt's been, I'm not going to crown him, but he's been money to me off the bench for him. So
crowd.
Well, you get what I'm saying. I mean, there you go,
crowning Borkhardt again.
You want to crown him? Crown him then. Listen. He's been dynamite for them off the bench. He's physical. He is their toughness, because that's the other part of this too, not just what's been going on with their offense, but just a general lack of toughness and grit in the paint. They get bullied by teams that are more physical in the paint. Their Golden State style, right, with athleticism, is going to be turnabout and win them a lot of games. They're going to be a matchup issue for most of the teams in the Big Ten. But when push comes to shove, they just get the hell beat out of them by more physical teams, Minnesota, Maryland, and Texas Tech. And the thing that made people upset about Tech isn't that Tech's great. They're phenomenal defensively. They get just enough offense. Nebraska was up in that game by 9 at one point, and then it just all unraveled. Nebraska was up 13-15 against Minnesota, then it unraveled. Nebraska was up 8 with a chance to build on it. What happens? You get turnovers. You get some tough shots that don't go in. Maybe you could have taken closer shots. And Nebraska just, they fought. They were gritty. But they didn't even need to put themselves in that position, and that was the frustration.
Real quick. I know we've got to jump to the rewind here in a bit. Now, was it me, though, or did you see something from Glenn Watson that's sort of hard to describe that looks promising for the stretch run here?
Oh, I've seen nothing but efficiency from him. I mean, I think he's got some fire.
And against Maryland in particular, he had a couple wow plays with his ball handling, with creating space, with kind of quick passes on whether they be entries or whether they be just true assists. He sort of seemed like he was playing at a not sort of seemed he's playing kind of at a different level than I've seen him play in a while. He just seemed to be a little more creative, a little more free, a little more in control of the ball, and in control of what they are trying to do on offense, whatever that is. I don't know. There were some promising signs from him that are worth keeping an eye on. Does he elevate his game to a point to where he's more than just a threat? He's kind of the guy running the show, because what is really Nebraska missing? Kind of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you know what you're going to get from Palmer. Palmer can run a clear out for him, let him do some one-on-one, let him do some penetration. Palmer's going to get his. But is he the guy that's leading the offense. I don't know if I'd say that. I don't know if I'd say he's leading it as much as he's the one that's sort of benefiting from it the most.
No, that's a good take on that.
Something to watch for with Watson, I think, especially starting tomorrow. Like, yep. You know, you'll see it. But he showed something there that if he can maintain that, he could sort of rise and kind of lift all boats.
Well, he needs to, and Nebraska, I don't want to circle and highlight tomorrow is make or break, but man, you got two desperate teams. Sunday, the tip off at 4:00, 4:30.
Everybody's favorite Fran.
Iowa's over, and Nebraska's trying to stop a skid. Let's tell you about Madonna Proactive, part of your New Year's resolution. Madonna Proactive, 56 in Pine Lake Road. Their expert staff can tailor a program to your needs. Sign up in January, receive an incredible monthly rate, just $39 a month for your first 6 months. Associate members, only $29 a month. And join Proactive today. Madonna offers over 140 weekly group fitness classes. You got a class for everyone. Great cardio, strength training, and, of course, the pool that allows you to work out. The aqua track is tremendous. And if you're trying to recover and rehab from an injury and you're messing with weight bearing right now because you've had surgery, Therapy Plus, Madonna Proactive, that aqua track is dynamite for you. Get signed up today with Madonna Proactive, 56th and Pine Lake, madonnaproactive.org, or 402-420-0000. A quick timeout. The Rewind is next. We'll talk some Husker hoops and some Roll Tide with Nebraska native Lars Anderson, part of the Jay Barker Radio Network and a contributor to The Athletic. Our Rewind with Lars Anderson next with Hail Varsity.
With Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery, with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranach.
Back to it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Welcome to 2019, and one of my favorite people, native Nebraskan and contributor to The Athletic, New York Times bestselling author, and co-host of the Jay Barker Show, Mr. Radio, down in Bama, Lars Anderson with us, at LarsAnderson71. Lars, first, congratulations. Your success, man, Monday through Friday radio.
Yeah, I finally joined the dark side and joined your world, Chris. And I'm hosting a show with Jay called the Jay Barker Radio Show with Lars Anderson and Carrie Adams. Carrie is our producer. And we got a pretty large footprint all across Alabama and throughout the South. And I've been doing it now for about 3 months. And it's been a lot of fun. And we dig deep into Alabama football. You know, that's all we're talking about right now. Antonio Langham has been joining us. Antonio, former Alabama defensive back. First round draft pick of the Cleveland Browns. Still really close to Nick Saban. Antonio actually played for the Browns when Saban was the defensive coordinator. And so Antonio is, you know, he talks to Nick a lot. He's a constant figure there at practice. And Jay's son, Braxton, is a four-string quarterback at Alabama. So we get a lot of insight into everything that's going on with the team.
We'll get back to Alabama as it's Bama-Clemson, third time the charm for the national championship in a little bit. Lars, you're a huge Nebraska basketball fan. You grew up watching, and you are all over this Nebraska basketball team this year. It's as good as I've seen for a while. And last night I was at a bar with the family catching the second half. And just heartbreak. It feel, you know, every road game feels like a game seven, right? I mean, the swings in emotion for Nebraska basketball fan. They go from in love to scorned lover. The 180 is pretty epic, and Nebraska lost a chance last night to secure a Big Ten road win against a really good squad in Maryland.
Yeah, one of my really good friends is Seth Davis, who called the game last night. Seth and I grew up together at Sports Illustrated, and Seth is a big fan of this Nebraska team. There is so much potential there. There's experience, just a lot of skill, a lot of length, and I think that, you know, Big Ten is widely considered to be the top conference in the nation, this country, in the nation this year. And boy, just letting the road game get away from them at Minnesota and then at Maryland last night. Those are two heartbreakers, but I think it's something that this team can learn from. They're going to have to learn to how to, you know, just win these games. And they're, you know, against Minnesota, they were in control with about 12 minutes to go in the second half, and they let it get away. And against Maryland last night, they were in control with about 12, 11 minutes to go, and they let that one get away. But this is a team, I think, that people can be really excited about. And if they peak at the right time, I think they're capable of actually making a run in the NCAA tournament. I know that's sort of putting the cart before the horse. There's a lot of basketball to be played between now and then. But the potential is there. They have guys that can score almost at every position, and depth may be a little bit of a concern. But you know, there's as much talent, raw talent on this team as I can remember in the last 15 years, 20 years. I mean, you have to go all the way back to the Piatkowski team, that team that had this much talent. You know, it's just. It's going to make these months that those of us who, you know, we pine for college football year round, it's going to make these months go by a little faster.
I think you're right. Lars Anderson with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Follow him on Twitter at LarsAnderson71, co-host of the Jay Barker Show, contributor to The Athletic, native Nebraskan, and a longtime Husker hoops fan. Now, I think you go back to the Pike senior year, where they won the Big 8 tournament. And I think the best team in history, you have to go back to the 91 squad that was a 3 seed. So I think that you hit the nail on the head with where the frustration is from. And that's the fact you have control, right? You're up and you have a chance to grow a lead and you don't do it. And you're the more experienced team. I think that's where the backlash is at. And I can't put Nebraska basketball fans, maybe I can, in the Cleveland Brown fan, Cub fan, long-suffering, you name a team, but Nebraska basketball fan, the bottom line is they're afraid to be hurt. They're afraid to invest it all and be disappointed because they don't see a team this good that often. And then, yeah, back-to-back years, right? Last year they were on the cusp. This year they need to deliver, and there's some fear that Nebraska will fall flat. I think they're talented enough. They'll get better from this, but you've got a bit of a trend now where your last two road games you could have closed. Sunday is going to be huge against Iowa on the road. How do they respond?
Yeah, it's a really important early season contest, and just to sort of prove to themselves that in a game that they should win, that they come out and play strong and get a road victory. You know, they're so good in Lincoln. I think it's one of the best home court advantages literally in all of college basketball, but they need to be able to prove that they can win on the road. And then also, by the way, Roby is just such a special player, just scratching the surface of what he's going to be. You just saw this, all facets of his game last night were on display. And I'm telling you, like Tim Miles, that final play of the game he drew up where he had Roby going to the rim with 3.8 seconds left, that pass to him is just a little bit harder. Roby slams at home, and that would be one of the ultimate highlights, but the passes came up a little bit short.
Well, that finish was almost there, and in Roby's super talented. The offensive rebounds, a bugaboo last night. We'll see where it goes. Lars, let's switch gears. And you've covered a lot of college football, 25 years and counting as a national veteran columnist and reporter on college football. Where does this Alabama team among Saban teams fall in the pecking order? Are they the best Bama team you've seen, or is that too extreme? Or are you going to say, ask me next year, because they'll be better next year? I mean, they just reload.
Well, I hate to say it, but I think they actually will be better next year because all of their skill position guys on offense are coming back, except Damian Harris, a running back. But all the wide receivers, quarterback Tua is going to be back. His little brother Talia is going to be there as his backup. Jalen Hurts is probably going to transfer. And the defense, look, for this year's defense, they lost the top six guys in the defensive backfield. So even when they were playing dime defense at the start of the year, all of them were first-year starters, and all those guys will be back next year. We'll be able to answer the question after Monday night if this is Nick's greatest team. A lot of people point to the 2012 team that absolutely destroyed Notre Dame in the national championship game. But this is clearly Nick's best offense, Saban has always played a pro-style, sort of grinded-out, conservative offense. And everything changed for Saban and the Alabama offense in the 2013 Iron Bowl. And that was the famous kick-six game. But it wasn't the kick-six play that changed his philosophy. It was the touchdown that Auburn scored right before the kick six. And that was when Nick Marshall, the Auburn quarterback, ran an RPO off to the left side of the field, and he tucked the ball in his arm, looked like he was about ready to run, and then he flipped the pass to a wide open Sammy Coates, who ran about 45 yards for a touchdown. And why that changed Nick's philosophy was because there were linemen who were 3 yards beyond the 3 yard mark blocking down the field. And Nick said after the game, okay, if the referees are going to call it or not call something like that, if this is the way the game is going, I'm going to make a change. So then he hires Lane Kiffin, goes to a spread offense, and that eventually leads to Tua coming to Alabama, going all the way out to Hawaii to recruit Tua, and it was Lane Kiffin who made the trip out to Hawaii to see him in person. But that whole thing, this whole Alabama, this new evolution of the Alabama offense can be traced back to that 2013 Iron Bowl. And, you know, this is now just, it's by far and away the most prolific Alabama offense in school history. I would argue that Tua is the most accurate quarterback we've ever seen in college football history. And we're really good at, especially the deep throws. And that's where Clemson is most susceptible. You saw Clemson give up over 500 yards passing to South Carolina's Jake Bentley, who consistently beat them over the top. So I think you're going to see Alabama be very aggressive on Monday night going after that Clemson secondary, which I think is the one weak spot on that entire team.
Lars, we got a couple minutes here. How do you feel about Monday night? What do you project for Coach Frost year two for Nebraska?
I think Alabama gets it done on Monday night. It's something to the tune of about 42-28. I think Alabama is going to win this game and then cover the spread pretty easily. I just think, to me, it felt like what Alabama faced against Oklahoma, that felt to me not like the national championship game.
Sure.
You look at Clemson's schedule, they have not played anybody all year. And, the Notre Dame team, I don't think it belonged on the field in the national semifinal. So I think Alabama gets it done on Monday night. I think year two of the Frost era is obviously going to be a lot better than year one. The great thing for Nebraska and Frost is that he's got the foundational piece set in Adrian Martinez, who just an extremely special freshman quarterback. He'll be going into year two. He'll know the offense better. And the great thing for Frost and all the staff there is now they can go around the country and recruit wide receivers and running backs and say, hey, come and play with this kid, Adrian Martinez. And, we all saw it again, just how special he was last year. And I, you know, talking to just people all around the country, there's this overwhelming sense that the Nebraska program is on an upward trajectory.
That is Lars Anderson. He is co-host of the Jay Barker Show, syndicated across the state of Alabama, contributor to The Athletic, and New York Times bestselling author, 9 books and counting for Lars in the New York Times bestseller list, and native Nebraskan at Lars Anderson 71. Lars, we'll get caught up again, man. This was a lot of fun. Thanks for the time.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Take care, Ben.
The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, Roll Tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Back with you, Tower 2 Weekend Edition, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Mark Kranak, Colton Stone. Give us a follow on Twitter at Hail Varsity, at Schmidt underscore radio, at Two Birds, One Stone, at Mark Skurs. You can read Brandon Vogel every morning on HailVarsity.com. Great work in the magazine. And follow him on Twitter at Brandon L. Vogel. We'll say hi to Vogues this morning. Brandon, how's your Saturday going, man? What's up?
Oh, not too bad. Kind of get back into the swing things now.
Yeah.
Nothing too amazing planned, I don't think.
Well, it's bittersweet, right? Because you have one more day of college football. That is Monday. And then it is winter conditioning. It is spring ball. There's still some odds and ends to tie up with more signings for Nebraska football. And moving forward, the excitement, let us start building for 2019, right? So, what are your main takeaways? We'll start with the Big Ten, this bowl season, and where's the league look perception-wise right now?
Oh, I think they look okay. The Michigan loss is probably the worst-looking one, just given where Michigan traditionally stands, although Purdue's loss was certainly the biggest. Mm-hmm. In fact, so big with such a huge first half deficit that I think it became easier to write that one off of like, Auburn's literally scoring a touchdown here on every drive. Like, this doesn't happen very often between any two teams, much less two teams, you know, that were bowl worthy at the end of the year. So those are the two that jumped out. Ohio State kind of got the win it needed to send Urban off into the sunset. And the Penn State one was a little bit perturbing. So, I think, you got quite the range of potential results to react and overreact to in some cases.
Brandon Vogel with us on Hail Varsity Radio. You just wrote up in your hot reads just kind of a quick roundup of what's been going on in the Big Ten as we start off the new year. And one of them that, I don't know if it's getting enough attention, but Pat Fitzgerald, of course, getting courted by the Packers. He says he's not interested. He's coming back. They've got the new facilities now, which tells you that they maybe can recruit a little better because of it. Do you see Northwestern continuing to be Northwestern as we know them? Marginal athletes on offense, DU up. It's basically what they do. Do you see them making a step because of their facilities and because Fitzgerald's back and maybe his reputation is only improving over time here?
I think so. I certainly don't think they're going anywhere. Taking a step, it's going to be tough for them to be what they've been over the past few seasons. Although who knows, if they could get the new quarterback in there, maybe they can keep that run going, but you just look at the West as a whole. Northwestern's on a good run. Minnesota, I think, is getting better. Nebraska's getting better. Purdue's getting better. You just look at it and like, there's going to be a good team or two each year in the division that's probably going to have to finish 5-7, 6-6, just because it's going to be tough to win games in that division in a way that hasn't been true since it's only existed since 2014, but since it existed. So yeah, I don't think Northwestern's in any danger of getting worse. It's just the division's getting better. Some teams might catch up to them from what they've been for the past 2 years.
Brendan Vogel's with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Let's talk Ohio State for a minute before we get into some Nebraska business. Fields transferring from Georgia to Ohio State. Ohio State losing Alex Grinch to Oklahoma. You still have Tate Martell that was the, I know he's not huge, but he's a great dual threat guy. What does this do for Ohio State with Fields, with Martell, and you lose Urban? I mean, what's Coach Day got here with Fields? Does that keep Ohio State as the favorite? What's it do with the locker room with Martell? Kind of parse this out for us here with Ohio State moving forward at the quarterback spot. That's been the difference maker for them for years. Great defense as well, but they've always had the get it done type quarterback in big games.
Yeah, you know, I don't know offhand exactly how much of, you know, what Urban Meyer ran at Ohio State over multiple offensive coordinators is what Ryan Day wants to run. You know, obviously he was the offensive coordinator and play caller this year. But you saw to almost a pretty surprising degree. And I mean, look, like Ohio State's offense was just fine. It was during that middle stretch there where you're kind of wondering what was going on. And you didn't have a Fields or a Martell type quarterback. You had an excellent passer and had to do it that way. So I think Ohio State getting that element of it back makes them a little bit more dangerous, you know. But you saw the Martell comments after the Rose Bowl, talking about kind of what he's been doing with one, basically warning Justin Fields not to come. That's not good for a first time head coach, I don't think, going into your first off season. So you'll watch that. And like, I mean, Ryan Day might be a really good coach. He might be a great coach. Even if he's great, like winning 90% of your games over seven seasons, which is what Urban Meyer did, is almost impossible. So I'm real interested in Ohio State. You can't forecast them to fall off, but they almost have to, at least a little bit. And that still might be enough to win the Big Ten most years, but it'd be real interesting to see what happens with the Buckeyes going forward.
Well, and at the same time, too, Brandon, like you would expect, yes, over time, Ryan Day is likely not to equal Urban Meyer's success. Could happen, but it's just unlikely. But that might not take hold for a couple years, right? Like he's still, you know, he's still doing okay kind of coming into this next season, right?
Yeah. I mean, the drop off, if there's one to be, will not be immediate. And then, you know, like I said, there was such a margin with what Ohio State was able to do, even though they didn't win the division every year he was there. They were pretty close. There may be room for Ryan Day to simply be 85% of his games good or 80%. And that's probably still enough. So we'll see, you know, anytime you have one of these changes, and Ohio State's unique in that they've done really well in terms of staying pretty steady. They're one of the few blue blood teams that has never really hit a valley over that span in the way that, you know, Nebraska, Texas, USC, basically every team you could name has, which almost makes it more likely that one of those is probably coming. Either that or they're the best school in terms of picking successors for school legends that we've ever seen. So,
well, just look at their timeline here. John Cooper, my Lord, he fell to 8-4 and lost to a bad Lou Holtz team. See ya, with first round talent every year. They could never beat Michigan. They're always 10-2 in top five. But then they ascend to Tressel, who is going 11-1, but losing national championship games aside from the flag in the end zone against Miami's 0-1 team. Then you go from Tressel to Urban. I mean, you have failed upward, man, every move you made. And now here's Ryan Day that. Urban's in timeout, go drive the ship straight, and they were more Ohio State-like less distraction, less issue with him. They were a calmer football team while he was babysitting, so to speak. So you're right, man. They've been bulletproof with all of the changes that have gone on there the last 25 years, and we'll see where they're at. Let's talk Nebraska. Athlon put out their way too early top 25. Nebraska comes in at 19. How do you think Nebraska fans, the feedback you've gotten, view Nebraska heading into 2019? Nationally, it feels like, okay, Adrian Martinez is a major wow factor. You have Coach Frost and the jump that happened at Central Florida in year two. So nationally, I don't even think folks look at 4-8 going into 19. Do Nebraska fans look at 4-8, or is because the way Nebraska finished, is that in pencil more so than pen?
I mean, I think it's in pencil, no matter who's looking at it. It was not a surprise to see Nebraska end up in the first one of those way too early top 25. They're going to end up in more here in the next couple of weeks. And I think you're right. I think when you're looking at it from the 30,000 foot view of a national outlet or columnist or writer, it's easy to kind of look at what happened at UCF. Same guy is doing that, you know, the same coach is there, and he's got a really great quarterback. You know, Nebraska fans who had lived and died with every moment, every press conference, every game, every practice report from the previous season, know all the ins and outs. They know all the details, the good ones and the bad ones. I think what I've seen so far is, you know, people have some reservations about the defense, obviously. It was the worst of the two units, and I think that kind of tempers things for Nebraska fans a little bit. But they know, they also probably know better than anyone just how much better than that 4-8 record Nebraska actually was.
Brandon Vogel with us on Hail Varsity Radio. You look at the Big Ten now, and you compare the East to the West, and it's almost by the program. Each team in the East, you could make an easy argument for they are trending down. Ohio State, probably trending down. Michigan, who knows? A lot of questions with how they close the year with 220-plus point losses. Penn State, Mark D'Antonio, Then you look at the West, and it's like the picture of coaching stability where you can make an argument that everybody in that side is trending up. Do you think that will show itself over the next couple of years, or is the West so far away from the East that it won't?
There's a pretty big gap to make up, and I'm not even sure that so much of it is a real gap as perceived, you know. And we can get into records of West teams versus East, all of that. But fact is, you've got three major historic names on the East side, and you've got one on the West in Nebraska. And I think that kind of alters where these teams start, just name recognition. I think that's true across the country. But you really see it play out with how the Big Ten's divisions are broken out. So that way too early we have now has Nebraska, Iowa, and Wisconsin at, I think, 17, 18, 19. That's fine if that's the actual top 25 poll, though. And those teams, one of them loses early. You know, when you get to the actual season, gets knocked out of the rankings. Like, those preseason rankings are fun to look at and mostly harmless, except for in the case of the West Division, where if you can't get teams in the top 10, then those wins kind of mean less for just the general observer who doesn't know anything about those teams. And the East doesn't have that problem. And, I mean, the top teams in the East have legitimately been better. So that's kind of a gap that I think is tough to close for the West. And it's almost more sort of a reputation/perception gap. But on the field itself, yeah, over the next couple of years, I think you could see the West close the gap a little bit. You know, Michigan and Penn State are kind of reaching that point with – good head coaches where they're trying to take the next step. And that's always gets a little bit tricky. You never know if school's going to have enough patience to kind of ride it out. or if a coach is going to, you know, change his staff. It's really the toughest spot to be in. But you're right. I think, you know, look at, if you had to pick a team to buy stock in, be like, I'm going to sell it for more than I bought it for at this time next year in the East. You pick Indiana. I mean, that really might be the safest bet, which tells you a lot about where things stand in the Big Ten here at the start of 2019.
Brandon Vogel's with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine at Brandon L. Vogel. So is the West's problem just championship game and bowl performances when you paint that picture of the West? Because Wisconsin's been right there, right? I mean, they took steps back this year compared to their projections, but the last 3 or 4 years, they've been pretty good. I mean, really good, between 10 and 11 wins. Iowa, when you go to Kinnick at night, Penn State escaped, but no one else has. I mean, Michigan and Ohio State didn't. Is it just about the bigger stage where the West has fallen short between championship game or even a West representative in the bowl game?
Yeah, I think the conference championship games haven't really helped. Bowls probably add a little bit to that, but really, I think it's almost more of where do the teams start? Like, what did I'm not trying to remember off the top of my head, but what I have finished, Iowa finished 9-4 this year.
Yes,
that what their record was, and about, I think Mississippi State was right in there, you know, and what's the difference between those two teams? I mean, you could get into it at a granular level, but one of the key differences is that Mississippi State played in the SEC, started highly ranked, and thus went into bowl season highly ranked, you know, and that Iowa's kind of path to 8-4, then 9-4, Northwestern's path to winning the division. It feels like the common one for those Big Ten West teams, where they start, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21 in the rankings, and, you know, they're not going to run to undefeated, so they lose one along the way, and they just never kind of get up there in terms of the rankings because they didn't start there. So even if you were basically as good as you should be, which a team at that spot in the mid-teens or so, it's kind of two-loss, three-loss team, you're getting less credit for it. And I think that's a place where the Big Ten West reputation hurts it.
Brandon Vogel with us on Hail Varsity Radio. So with Urban leaving, that's Saddam leaving Iraq, here comes the power vacuum. You would have to say, in terms of most coveted coach, best coach, you know, you probably still have to put Harbaugh there, but that looks like a tenuous hold. Can Frost, within a year or two, become the coveted coach of the Big Ten?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I think Franklin might still be there. You know, the reservations that some Penn State fans might have, and I don't think they're big, or even the majority of Penn State fans seem relatively minor. There's some question marks for them going forward, but you know, when everyone was talking about, hey, is Clay Helton out at USC? The name you heard most often was James Franklin. And I think that'll be true for at least another year, you know, assuming the wheels don't fall totally off at Penn State, which I don't see happening. So he's kind of the next in line, but you go beyond that, you've got Jeff Brohm, who Louisville interest was pretty unique. I don't think that's going to go away either. Like, if anything, I think he might become more in demand. And if Purdue continues to improve, put himself in line for better jobs. But yeah, I think Frost is kind of the one who's already had that buzz before with the year the UCF had. And if Nebraska continues to improve and then win big, he's kind of your de facto candidate, I think, for that designation.
Brandon Vogel's with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine. Vogues, before we say goodbye, what's coming up this weekend on HailVarsity.com?
Yeah, so with plenty of recruiting. Players get back to school at the start of the week. We'll, you know, get into some winter conditioning and start really looking ahead at the 2019. We've spent a lot of time since the season ended looking back. We'll have hoops, men's and women's, getting our January issue, which will be a pretty exciting recruiting issue. It's going to have two stories that I think people are really going to like about members of the 2019 class. So that's coming here in another week and a half. So people can look forward to that one.
Vogue, thanks for jumping on with us, bud. Good to get caught up and talk some football.
Thanks a lot.
There he is, Brandon Vogel, LVarsity.com and magazine. Give him a follow at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. I want to remind you about buckling up, click it or ticket. Something's got to stop that motion of your body when you get into an accident. It can be a safety belt or it can be the windshield. Seat belts prevent excessive injury when your vehicle and your body need to slow down in a hurry. This applies to the driver's seat, passenger seat, or back seat. Buckle up now, click it or ticket. A message from the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. A quick time out. The Iron Horse up next. Gary Sharp will join us on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Marlags, hi neighbor. What are you doing?
Glad to have you back.
Yes, sir. You heard me right.
Here are the guys, Schmidt and Kranak.
Well, Hector, here's the game plan. You're going to bring us two absolute martinis. You know how I like them, straight up. And then precisely 7.5 minutes after that, you're going to bring us two more. Then two more after that, every 5 minutes until one of us passes out.
Excellent strategy, sir.
If you're counting at home, Colton Stone has yet to pass out. And he is taking that prescription from Mr. McConaughey, who, yes, was on the sidelines of the Sugar Bowl. Wearing his burnt orange leather. We say hi to the Iron Horse, Gary Sharp, with us on Hail Varsity Radio Weekend Edition. Sharpie, how's your week been, man?
It's been good. Happy New Year. Colton doesn't show any ill effects, though. That's impressive.
I know. He is impressive, and he hasn't done quite the hum chest beating yet, but there'll be a Saturday he comes in just starting to do that. Let's start with Dedrick Mills. We spent some time with you last week on the Nebraska recruit, and things came to light about what's been up with him. Moving forward, do you have a prediction at all? And if you don't want to get into it, I understand, but do you think Nebraska and Mills stay together, I guess, is the best way to ask it?
Yes, I think they stay together, but their face-to-face on campus may not happen until after this upcoming semester is over.
Yep. Some things to clean up and move forward with. Gary Sharp's with – go ahead.
Because you have to keep in mind, and I think Scott and his staff knew kind of the background when they were recruiting him, and those conversations were a two-way street on, you know, we're giving you another chance. We think you've turned things around, but you gotta be able to, you know, this is the culture that we have, and we're gonna bring you in here, and this is what we expect out of you. So I think they've been pretty upfront with him. They've been loyal to him. He actually has been upfront with Nebraska. This stuff that has gone on is not a surprise, and so that's why I don't think Nebraska will go away. They're just saying, take care of your stuff, and we'll see you when we see you. But I'm getting the sense that it's more likely it won't be until the summer. Now, keep in mind, you're bringing him into a position where the running back room has got a lot of different personalities. I mean, Mo Washington is a peculiar guy, not on the bad side. It's just his personality. He's not a tough guy to handle, but, you know, he's going to be one of your veteran guys in that running back room. So that's a position, you know, Ryan Helt's going to earn his money in this upcoming season. But to answer back your question, I expect Mr. Mills to make an appearance at Nebraska just a little bit later than sooner.
Now, Gary, coming up today is the All-America Bowl. Nebraska's got three signees playing, and then a potential fourth one in Noah Pola-Gates. But Wandale Robinson is kind of Husker fans' first chance to be able to watch him live. I'm sure you're doing that. Are you watching the game, first of all? And then, do you expect Wandale to do something in here to make, I don't know, everybody freak out and think that he's going to be the second coming the second he walks on campus?
Well, you know, some of these games, a good friend of ours, Mike Schaefer, I was talking to him yesterday, and he said he didn't like the games because they're kind of stale. And some years they are. But remember last year in the Under Armour game when it was our first chance to watch Mo Washington? Wasn't Mo Washington basically the same guy Nebraska got that played in that game? So there is stuff to read into it. I think people will be enamored with Wandale. I think I look more at the practices when they're going one-on-one and all of that video leading up. But the guy I'm really interested in watching is Ty Robinson. I want to see what kind of giddy-up he has off the line, if there's push by him, you know, how he plays, because he's a guy that may walk in and sometime around South Alabama you hear, yeah, Ty Robinson is going to get some snaps. But also keep an eye on Noah Pola Gates to, you know, when he flashes the bones after he makes a head tackle, because I'm pretty certain that he's coming to Nebraska. I just get every indication that he's going to say yes in a couple of weeks to Nebraska. That may he may have already said yes a while ago to Nebraska. Just listen to his interaction with the Nebraska guys and some of the stuff he says. And I know if a Nebraska reporter or a USC reporter, Arizona State reporter is interviewing him, he might tend to say something positive about that school. But I just get the sense that he's in for Nebraska, and he's been in for a while.
Gary Sharp's with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Sharpie, I want to go back to something about Ryan Held, and you said, you know, he'll earn his money with that running back room, and Held's tireless as a recruiter, as a motivator, as a teacher. And what do you like most about Held, and what do you think he brings to that running back room? I mean, what's his biggest strength?
Well, I think that he's familiar with the position. He knows how the position works. He knows exactly what he wants out of guys that are in that room. And I think he's upfront and honest that if I tell you that with hard work and practice and you clean A, B, and C up, you're going to get a shot to play on Saturday. And if you do that, here's where we might use you on Saturday. Then I build up your hopes, and then Saturday comes, and you're nowhere near the field. I think honesty, he has a really good relationship with his running backs because he's recruiting a lot of those guys. So he's known them for a while before they ever step on campus. And he's in step with his head coach. His head coach says, hey, I'd like this out of a running back. And Ryan helps him, exactly. So this is what I'm going to do, coach. Get these guys ready to turn them over to you on Saturday. And as you can see, his running backs, they have a special bond. I also think Ryan's got the kind of personality that he can handle different personalities in that room. Not guys that give him pushback, but guys that are a little bit different, and they let him be themselves. And, you know, kind of that position, you'll get some evens once in a while. You just can't let them go all the way over the top where they affect your roster, as we saw last year when your culture wasn't strong enough to endure a guy that was not happy in his role.
Gary Sharp with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Speaking of the staff, you know, the American Football Coaches Association convention is coming up this week in San Antonio. And that's a huge networking event. That's where, you know, the different assistants start to talk to other programs and maybe start to make some moves. Who, if anybody on Nebraska's staff, is the biggest flight risk?
Nice.
I wouldn't say flight risk because that makes it look like they're looking to get out. I think Troy Walters and Travis Fisher are two guys that are pretty popular outside of Lincoln, Nebraska. And I don't know if there was like a discussion when the whole staff came to Lincoln, hey, give me 2 years. Give me at least 2 years, and then I'll help you find any opportunity that may come up for you. I don't know if there's some, like, you know, just verbal agreement. But I think those two coaches in particular will be coaches that, you know, other programs may say, hey, are you interested? We may have a promotion for you. But at this point, I don't see, you know, Nebraska moving on from any of their staff or any of their staff taking another job. But, you know, keep an eye on Troy Walters. You know, he had a chance last year to get a head coaching job. You know, he's kind of putting a lot of good things on his resume. He'll be a guy to watch in the future on somebody trying to pluck him.
Do you get the sense that Fisher, do you get the sense that Fisher's turned down other overtures? Do you feel like other programs have reached out to him already?
I don't know that. If I'm an NFL team, mm-hmm. he's a guy that I would have on my list. I don't know about college because you got to look at the recruiting side of what he does as well. But if I'm an NFL team, and I look at Travis Fisher and go, man, that guy's got an NFL background. Now he's been in college. He's starting to develop guys. He's coaching some guys that have gone on to the league. I think if I'm an NFL team, Travis Fisher would be on my radar if I need a defensive back coach.
Yeah. Gary Sharp with us on Hail Varsity Radio. So it looks like, for the most part, Nebraska's staff is going to stay intact. And as you look at the shakeout of the Big Ten with Urban Meyer leaving, and then kind of who's coming back, all of a sudden the West is somewhat stable. Do you think Frost and his staff, we asked Brandon the same question, do they have a legitimate chance to be kind of the most, I guess, coveted staff in the Big Ten, considering that Meyer's gone and the East seems to be trending down, West seems to be trending up, a lot of guys that are close to retirement in the conference overall? I mean, do they have the chance to be kind of the hot staff where assistants are, you know, people are trying to pluck assistants left and right to get a little bit of the Nebraska flavor in their program?
Maybe a year away, a year of a bowl trip and more of a sample size than Lincoln. But I hear what you're saying, Mark. I think the Wisconsin staff has some guys.
Uh-oh. Did we lose Sharpie?
Dollars that schools are getting is assistant coaching jobs at Big Ten schools are pretty good right now. You're paid pretty well. You're in a conference where the recruiting has started to go up. Your facilities are better. So it's not a bad gig to be an assistant coach in the Big Ten. And unlike, like we saw at Nebraska, where rolling through defensive backs, where guys would jump at jobs whenever they would open, I think there's a comfortability here at Nebraska. I mean, if you're a Nebraska assistant football coach and you're paid well and you like who you're working for and you like the environment that you're around and what's on the future, whether it be the talent in your program, all football facility that's going to be right around the corner possibly, I think this is a good place to be. That's why I think from this staff, if anybody left, you would look at it and go, man, that's a great opportunity. I wouldn't turn that down. Good on you, coach.
A couple more minutes. Gary Sharp's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Sharpie, let's switch gears to Nebraska basketball. What'd you take away from Wednesday night at Maryland? And how much weight do you put on Sunday in Iowa City for this squad and Coach Miles?
Yeah, missed opportunity for Nebraska, but it seems like it's in its DNA when you have a chance like that in a game to pull it out. You know, Nebraska just could never get separation, and good on Maryland. Maryland played separation because they want to be in the NCAA tournament. You know, Nebraska struggled rebounding. The 8 missed free throws, including 2 front ends of the 1-1, really, really hurt. There were times at the end of the game where JPJ was standing around pounding the ball into the floor. He had some key turnovers. He also had some key buckets. But I think they got stale late. I like the final play call. It's just Maryland defended it really well. It's one of those games that you hope you look back on and go, gosh, man, if we would have had that, we would be this blank seat. But you can't let that game beat you on Sunday, because you would think that Iowa 0-3 after they got run out of Mackey Arena on Thursday night, that they're going to play with desperation. And I know people are saying for Fran McCaffrey, that is a must win. And there's a lot of rumblings in Iowa. It's still early. I mean, Nebraska and Iowa both have played 3 conference games. You got 17 more. But Nebraska, I know people say that's a must win for Iowa. Hey, that's a must win for Nebraska, because all of a sudden, would you like to have 3 straight losses in the Big Ten when you feel real good about yourself? You put it out there that, hey, we want respect. Well, you bounce back from a tight loss, and it's going to be tough. It's going to be those kind of games every night on the road. You bounce back from that loss on Wednesday, and you come back and you win in Iowa City against a team that needed that victory. I think moving forward for Nebraska, we talk about all the offensive options they have. This team will get the movement in the Big Ten and a spot in the NCAA by how they play defense. They're not as good as they were defensively last year, and they've got to get back to playing better defense for this team to get to the success that they have, because that's still a very good basketball team that's going to have to find a way to win on the road and, of course, protect that really good home court advantage.
Gary Sharp with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Nebraska, man, Gary, and you do play-by-play for Nebraska, Omaha, so you're on the road and you're in the college basketball scene directly in it. Can you just put into perspective for, you know, folks that maybe aren't as familiar, just the grueling run that Nebraska is about to have to go on? You're talking about 17 games in less than 2 months coming up, all against high major teams in the Big Ten. I mean, Nebraska will absolutely be tested, and there's a chance that Nebraska could flame out. There's also a chance that they could rise. But can you just put into perspective, I guess, the grueling nature of what's to come here in 2 months?
Yeah, I think a couple of things, and that's a great point, Mark, is you got to have depth. Because what happens if you have an injury or a guy is sick on a particular night? You can't be in your lineup. You have to have the next man up. You also have to have a really, really smart staff in a basketball team, because some of these games are one-day prep, or you have a little bit longer prep for a team that maybe you haven't seen all year. Now you're going to get lucky, and some teams you're going to see twice. But you have to have a team that, and Nebraska is this year, with their veteran leadership and guys that have been in it for a while, is when I diagram something in the locker room or in the huddle, the guys that are on the floor will be able to take it from the huddle of the locker room and take it out to the floor, and we don't have to explain it again. That's where a guy like through these stretches, Glenn Watson, is pretty important in terms of getting Nebraska in the right position. Now it's up to execution on the back end of that. But it's one. Also, another thing is you can't dwell on one game. Once that game's over, you've got to move on to the next thing, next game. And that's why I think Nebraska can't let Maryland beat them in Iowa City. It's an entirely different opponent. It's an entirely different setting. You can't worry about Maryland. Maryland is over. Now you got to worry about Iowa. And then once Iowa's over, you got to worry about Penn State. And then once Penn State's over, you got to worry about Indiana. And then, oh, by the way, once Indiana's over, you got to worry about Michigan State. The Big Ten's going to be a beast. It's going to be a difficult night every night, especially on the road. 10 teams are projected to be in the NCAA tournament. You don't want to be that ninth or tenth team. You want to have a nice enough resume where you're in the middle of the pack or closer to the Michigan State, where there is no doubt, and you don't have to have that as an X factor, worrying about it down the stretch while you're trying to win games.
Do your work now and get a better seating on Selection Sunday is kind of what's so frustrating about Wednesday, because that's a crop report type win when it comes to consideration. Sharpie, do you worry about this team's chemistry at all? And I just bring it up because you're not going to win and be where you want to be without JPJ. You also have the ability to have balanced scoring with this roster. Cope only got 4 shot attempts. Glenn was super efficient. You have Thomas Allen. He took 8 shots, made 3. Some of them seemed rushed because it felt like he didn't know he was going to get the ball again or not. I mean, there was you take the good and the bad with JPJ being as awesome as he is, and I even hesitate to say the word bad associated with him, but just some of the choices or the settling early shot 3-point possessions. Do you think this team's able to talk it out amongst themselves about, hey, maybe find me on a pick and pop if I'm Copeland to Palmer, or be a little bit more patient on offense? Do you worry about that moving forward at all in the locker room?
No, I do not at all. I mean, this team is pretty strong. They like their head coach. Their head coach, into January, likes their team. That's not necessarily the case with a lot of coaches. By this time of the year, they already hate their team. let me address Copeland real quick. I know we're up against it. There were people that read too much into his body language. Nebraska coaches know this because I asked this question to him on Wednesday. They made the mistake with Copeland on again, the game against Maryland. They did not create shots for him. Isaac Copeland is not going to be able to create stuff on their own. So they are very cognizant. They made the mistake against Maryland that they did not create enough opportunities for Copeland that they drew up. That will change moving forward. So I know I even had people say, hey, man, you should have seen him. He was angry and he hit the ball. Well, he was frustrated. And Nebraska will do a better job in creating opportunities for Copeland, because he can't create on his own. But they know that as good as James Palmer Jr. is, they can't have him and then 4 guys standing around watching him. I think if this was last year, I would have been, I don't know if Maryland will beat him again. This year, I'm pretty confident they addressed their problems quickly by the time they got back at 2 a.m. the next morning from Maryland, that they're going to be okay for Iowa. But the Hawkeyes, you're going to get their best shot initially. Cook is going to be a challenge, but you're going to win the game tomorrow strictly on defense. And if you do, you forget about Maryland. You're 2-2. You got a home game against Penn State where you got a good chance to be 3-2.
Good stuff. Sharpie, have a great weekend, man. Thanks for your insight today, bud.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Take care. Gary Sharp with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Good stuff. It's a question I talked about yesterday and we spent a little bit of time on today. Not trying to make a mountain out of a molehill, but you did see some of that frustration there where guys didn't get opportunities, and it could have helped carry some of the luggage, so to speak, with possessions and maybe better shots. But I can't wait for tomorrow. I'm anxious to see Nebraska bounce back. They have a history of doing that this season where they take a step backward. They're always, at least they've been able to take a step forward. And we'll see where that shakes out in Iowa City. I want to remind you about Sauter Heyman. The sale of all sales continues for you. Once-in-a-lifetime deals with Sauter Heyman's total inventory liquidation sale. Don't wait any longer for best selection. SauterHeyman.com. Up to 70% off. Incredible jewelry and the most prestigious jeweler in the area, giving you savings like never before. South Point in Lincoln, Grand Island, both those locations for this once-in-a-lifetime total inventory liquidation sale, SauterHeyman.com. And when you get there, get signed up for a free $5,000 one-carat diamond pendant. Get there today, Sauter Heyman, and their total inventory liquidation sale. Go see Rick and your friends at Sauter Heyman, SauterHeyman.com. We'll wind out a Saturday next with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Early to rise with Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Here's Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranick.
One final time, you miss any part of the show, good stuff today. Gary Sharp's always awesome, the Iron Horse. Brandon Vogel was with us this hour, and our Rewind segment featured Lars Anderson. Kranick, are you fired up about Monday? Are you part of that Bama-Clemson fatigue crowd, or are you part of the group that's like, give me the best, and if these are the best, hey, it's college football, it's the championship game, I'm all good for it. Where are you at?
I'm just fatigued from the standpoint of it would be nice to have some other teams up in the mix, but you're crazy if you can't appreciate what they're doing.
Right.
And how, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, if you just watch the game for what it is, it should be an entertaining, hard-fought game, right? Like, with a lot of really good athletes making big-time pressure plays. So from that standpoint, you like it. But yeah, I'm ready for some other teams to bust through. It's kind of ridiculous how those two have had a stranglehold, right?
Well, like, they are the deepest. They are the best. They are the most talented. I mean, Georgia didn't finish the way they wanted to, but Georgia's been there, right? They've been the only team to have Bama down the last 2 years. Yeah. Clemson's been phenomenal.
Yeah.
And they are just so gritty. And I think you'll see some teams make strides. I mean, it can't last forever. I mean, eventually Saban's going to step away, but they got another 10 years, right? I mean, and Dabo's been incredible. So I don't have fatigue. What I don't want, though, is I don't want boat races anymore. I want a back-and-forth compelling game, and you got that last year with OU Georgia, and then the championship comeback by Bama. So just give me good football games that has high drama versus severe beatings. And you had a blowout. You had a blowout bowl season this year that wasn't any good.
I like how nobody's really sitting out in this game too.
Absolutely.
So many of these bowl games have been affected by that.
Kranick, have a good weekend, brother.
You too, sir.
All right, thanks, Colton Stone, Chris Schmidt. Back at you on Monday with Hail Varsity.